The following is a Serious Sports presentation.
Right now, it's time to dig out the jams, motherfucker! Kick out the jam. Yes, kick out the jam.
Hey guys, it's another night of the walk-ons, and it's a special night because Mark Ennis, who's here with me tonight, it is Earth Day, which is just a wonderful holiday.
Well, here in the state that burns more coal than anybody else, we love Earth Day.
Is that true? Is Kentucky a coal-burning state?
It's not a coal-burning state. It certainly is a coal-mining state. But look, the other day I was behind a guy that had a bumper sticker that had on his truck that said, "If you don't like coal, don't use electricity." And I doubt you see that in very many other states.
No, and I don't even get it. So I think we just burn tobacco here in North Carolina. I think that's how we fuel most of our...
Just skip the middleman and burn tobacco, like the Germans during hyperinflation. Just burn the money. Don't buy oil. Just burn the money.
Exactly. There's really nothing wrong with that. But yeah, it's Earth Day, which, you know, we're completely paperless on this podcast, so we do contribute.
That means we have no money.
That is true. That is true. Also, according to Twitter, Mark, the number two trending topic in America right now is National Send Nudes to Your Man Day, which is, I mean, oh my God.
This would be one of many topics where if I told my wife about it, she would simply roll her eyes and wonder how she ended up with me.
I mean, you're raising a daughter in this world, and it's just a shame.
She has no hope.
None. Well, so I actually am more concerned about you than
I her. Also have no hope.
I think Maddie will be able to fend for herself. But you
I'm
know.
Going the arranged marriage route. That's how I'm going to avoid all of this. I'm just going to cut the Gordian knot by marrying her off at 8.
I can't even imagine. One of my good friends has 4 daughters.
Oh, Lord.
And yeah. So
and heartburn.
Yeah. It's just unbelievable. I don't know how he deals with it. But hey, we've got some basketball to talk about.
Yeah.
Other than, you know, Earth Day and Send Your Man Nudes Day, it's the ACC schedule announcement day, which is just so exciting.
Well, yeah, it's funny because I've gotten used to the last couple of years basically never knowing when the Big East / ACC would come up with a schedule because you didn't really know who was going to be in the league. For a couple, till deep into the summer. You got to remember, I mean, last year for football, the AAC added Temple like 3 months before the season started just to have 8 teams. So to have this sort of thing out this early, it was a refreshing change from the way things have been.
I guess when you put it that way, it's because they released the schedule for 2014-2015 and 2015-2016. Which really, even a year ago, but definitely 2 years ago, would have been incredibly optimistic for the ACC to post future schedules beyond like that next season.
I'm sure they posted the 15-16 season just to mock Greg Swain.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. They should have like put in the...
They should have put Oklahoma State in there somewhere just to mess with people.
I was going to say UConn. But that would be more trolling you guys up in Louisville than it would be here. But I guess, I mean, Louisville, this is a big announcement. I mean, obviously you went through a new conference last year, which is sort of the same conference, essentially, minus, you know, some of the other better teams in there. But it's a brand new conference for Louisville next year. And this is really your first experience at all with any kind of announcement, right? No, I guess we've had the football rotation that was announced.
Yeah, but you know what? It really, this was the first one, because even with the football schedule, there was still basketball season that happened. So this was like the announcement, and there's really nothing intervening between now and when Louisville starts actually being an ACC member. And the basketball season just ended. And for folks around here who plunked down the same amount of money as they did any other year to get Memphis and UConn and Cincinnati and USF and UCF, you know, just a barf-tastic home schedule for the most part. Next year, it was a really kind of a welcome back to big, big, big college basketball for the average person. And now you're a Louisville fan, you wake up and you see the schedule and say you're going to get North Carolina and Duke coming to your place. Kentucky plays here this year. NC State, Virginia won the ACC. Pitt, you know, an old ACC friend. And Notre Dame, or excuse me, an old Big East friend, and Pitt, or Notre Dame, an old Big East friend. You know, to get all of those back on the schedule, it will be a welcome change from basically trying to trick yourself into being excited about most home games.
So were people legitimately excited in Louisville? Like, what was the reaction? Because I'm down here in North Carolina, in the Triangle area. We've done this for thousands of years down here. And, you know, really, people kind of look at the schedule and immediately jump to, oh my God, my team is screwed for, you know, whatever reason, either real or completely fabricated. But what, I mean, in Louisville, was it like the general fans, were they excited about seeing those teams on the schedule?
They're nothing but excitement. There weren't even really reasonable fans who were like, geez, this is going to be really hard. And you got to remember the last year with the AAC in football and basketball both, there's just been this, Louisville's been off the grid, and so people just dismissed the AAC in football from the get-go, and the AAC in basketball actually kind of did itself proud, but still people dismissed it most nights, and Big Monday was no longer a Big East AAC thing. It was an ACC thing from now on. So Louisville and the AAC, they didn't really exist. I mean, people just didn't pay attention. And rightfully so. I mean, for the most part, most of these games were awful, and teams, they don't resonate with many people. So to see a schedule with teams that people know and teams that draw an audience and will be challenging. I mean, it was work for fans to kind of get excited. Like, you're like, yay, it's a Tuesday and we play Houston. It's hard for people to get excited about that. So, yeah, it was unmitigated excitement that you're going to be back on the radar. And I think that's been the case with the football and the basketball schedule both. People sort of excited about the fact that they're going to be playing against other teams that people care about and the outcome will matter.
Yeah, and so I'm interested in obviously how Louisville fans reacted, but I'm also interested in how Maryland fans reacted to Louisville's schedule. So let's quickly go, and here's why I say this. You know why, but let's explain it to our listeners who obviously aren't very smart, or else they wouldn't be listening to us. At home, Louisville has Pittsburgh, Virginia, Miami, UNC, Clemson, Duke, State, Virginia Tech, and Notre Dame. That's Louisville's home slate this year. It's going to sell a lot of tickets, going to generate a lot of excitement. Let's go to Maryland's schedule this year, and I'm just kind of scrolling through to see who their home games were against. So they had Georgia Tech at home, Notre Dame, Pitt, Miami, FSU, Wake. They did have Syracuse at home, Virginia Tech, Virginia, and Florida State. So really, you look at the big draws. They did have Syracuse at home, but Duke and UNC were the big ticket drivers. And really, traditional kind of secondary rivals for Maryland did not travel to Maryland last year. And that was a big point of contention, a big controversy, an obvious intentional slap in the face to Maryland, regardless of what kind of just scheduling quirk that Swofford called it. Louisville got hooked up, yes?
Yeah, and I would say so, without question. I think that Louisville really was rewarded for sort of standing in Maryland's stead, and I think that for Louisville fans, it was a reward for putting up for last year. And they really are getting kind of the Syracuse treatment, where they're getting the big names to come to their place. They're getting the home and home with North Carolina this year. They're getting the home and home with Duke next year. I think it was an obvious twisting of the knife at Maryland last year. Maryland, like you mentioned, completely got screwed. The ones that everybody knows the rivalries that everybody sort of recognizes with Maryland, and it's, you know, a founding member of the ACC, didn't get any of them at home, and then Louisville gets them all at home next year. It was clear that was intentional, not shocking to me at all. And all of those are going to be marketable games for the ACC as well. So Duke's, I think Duke, more than anybody else, is probably bound to another year of 9 o'clock starts.
Oh, always. Always. I mean, that's just kind of how it works at Duke. But, you know, they're on TV, so I don't think anyone other than Coach K is going to complain about it when he's asked to complain about it. So I think they're fine there. But, you know, what's fascinating about you look at Louisville's schedule and compare it to Maryland's schedule, what would be really interesting would be to have, like, someone break down the financial impact of ticket sales lost in Maryland last year and gained this year in Louisville. The problem is Revelle can't tweet right now. So we don't have Darren Revelle to give his take on the financial impact of the schedule.
Do you remember the Beavis and Butthead where they had sex ed and they were not allowed to make a sound?
Yes.
And they had to stifle all of their laughter the entire day. And like the minute the bell rang, they ran out the front door and just said everything and laughed everything for like an hour. That's what Revelle's going to be like when he finally gets back on Twitter.
That was one of the greatest episodes in modern television history of any series. But I'm honestly, and let me get your take on this. I think Revelle is sitting at home right now, assuming that everyone on Twitter is silent. And kind of sitting it out with him. I don't think he feels like he's missing anything.
Can you imagine? Like, his poor wife is like, when is your suspension up? You leave me alone. Right? She's like, why are you talking to me? Get back on Twitter.
Is he married?
He's married and he has a...
That's surprising. I mean, I'm just going to leave it at that. That's kind of surprising.
But he did ask Kate Upton to be his Valentine despite being married, which is pretty awesome for Mrs. Revelle.
How many nudes is he missing today? Because everyone's sending him nudes on Twitter. So
6.3% of the nudes that he would normally get is what he's missing.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about that. So the other thing about this schedule, and I know it's not unique to the ACC, but it certainly plays a big factor in the ACC. Even looking at this last season at Virginia's regular season championship, is, in a sense, the regular season championship won and lost with the schedule announcement?
Absolutely. And I think last year with Virginia, taking nothing away, I mean, I think Virginia was a good team, but I think the skepticism about them because they didn't get the home and home really with anybody that was any of the top teams in the league last year. I think the skepticism about them was right. And really, the ACC right now is experiencing what the Big East had to go through every year with 16 teams, where you just didn't play that many teams twice, and you could get to the end of the year and have a 3-4-way tie and really have no viable tiebreaker. It has a lot to do with the schedule announcement and what they decide is marketable versus sort of equitable in terms of having a fair schedule. And I think it's just the way it's going to be going forward.
So based on that, and I'm not asking you to break down games or give any kind of predictions or anything, but you know, just quickly skimming through the schedules, who do you think is favored the most and who do you think is negatively impacted the most by the schedule in terms of teams that can legitimately have a shot to win the title?
It's really hard to say because all they really gave the most, I think the teams with the most, the highest expectations, they kind of gave them the hardest schedule. North Carolina, kind of a loser. They've got to play Duke home and home. They've got to play Louisville home and home. And then they play Syracuse. And I think that's a difficult, difficult schedule for North Carolina. I wouldn't want that. I think it's very difficult. I think Louisville is extremely difficult, but they didn't get Duke home and home. They only played Syracuse one time. So for a team that's still returning a bunch of pieces from last year, I think it's pretty good. I mean, I think North Carolina's kind of the loser. They really got – North Carolina, the loser, they got the most difficult, and they got two of the best teams home and home. They're sort of the anti-Virginia from last year.
See, I almost thought it was the opposite, where I'm looking at, yes, UNC will have to play Duke on the road and at home, two games against Louisville. They'll have to play at NC State as one of their permanent rivals. But the other road games they get, Miami, Clemson, Wake, Pitt, and Boston College. You know, none of those – teams will be even close to the talent level that UNT is going to have next year. And they've got Virginia and Syracuse just once, and they've got them both at home. I think that's an advantage for the Tar Heels versus being a more difficult schedule, like you just mentioned.
Well, I think if you're looking at a winner, you look at Syracuse, they got Duke home and home, but then look at their others. They get Pitt home and home, Boston College home and home, Virginia Tech home and home. I mean, if Syracuse has, and they get Louisville at home, they get Virginia at home. So they've got to play at North Carolina and at Notre Dame and at State. I mean, not a difficult schedule for them at all. Syracuse really, I think, is the big winner.
Yeah, I would sort of agree with that. And I would also think, and this is probably a team that's outside of that top tier that could legitimately win the title, but could be like this year's Virginia, where they, you know, kind of come from that middle tier and emerge as a top team. Definitely not anywhere near as talented as Virginia was this last year, but in terms of having a favorable schedule, is Miami. They've got Duke and Syracuse on the road. But their double their home and home series are against FSU, Virginia Tech, Louisville, and BC. So anytime you get Virginia Tech and BC in your double round robin, you're doing it right. And those are the two teams that you want to play twice.
Yeah, that's true. And if you're Notre Dame looking to bounce back from one of the worst years in recent memory, having Boston College, Georgia Tech, and Clemson as three of your four home-and-home series, that's not bad either.
Yeah, and we're kind of getting out of the early entry season for the NBA, but KJ McDaniels announced today, and that's a huge hit to Clemson. He's really their only player, and he was good enough to make them a viable opponent for good teams next year, but I don't think they've got anything now. So that's a good point.
Let me ask you, because Mike Rutherford and I, who runs Card Chronicle, he and I were texting back and forth today. It was pretty obvious last year and this year that the ACC is hell-bent on Duke-Syracuse being a thing. And conversely, it seems like the ACC is hell-bent on Louisville and Virginia being a thing, because they are Louisville's home-and-home opponent this year in basketball and next year in basketball, and they're Louisville's crossover opponent in football. Why do you think the ACC sort of went with Virginia as the crossover thing to make Louisville's rival in the same way they kind of did with Duke and Syracuse?
I don't know. I think kind of maybe just from continuity's sake, where it was sliding Louisville in as a replacement to Maryland's really the only thing I can think of, but really, with Duke and Syracuse, I'm surprised that Syracuse wasn't Duke's second rival. You know, how each team in basketball has got two permanent rivals, and it's UNC and Wake Forest for Duke. I was fully expecting it to be UNC and Syracuse. So maybe that's more of an ESPN thing than it is an ACC thing, although I think it's a good move for the league to have those two teams play as much as possible. But on, you know, maybe it's kind of following what they're going to be doing on the football side. And, you know, Duke, Wake football kind of, it's funny to say Duke and Wake football moves any needle, but around here, it certainly moves the needle more than a Duke Syracuse football matchup. And, you know, football rules everything. Maybe that's why. It's the only thing I can think of, but there's just not, there's not a whole lot of natural rivalries within the ACC outside of Tobacco Road. And, you know, you see on the football side, yeah, you've got FSU, Miami as a rival, but neither are each other's primary rival. And it's kind of a strange thing that I think you'll easily fit into in the ACC, because your permanent rival is going to be Kentucky, and they're a non-conference team, just like Florida and South Carolina and Georgia. So it's just one of those things where it's a strange thing about the conference is they went away from those natural, local rivals to kind of not a lot of in-conference rivals these days.
Yeah, I wonder if, and I agree with you on that, I think that it's just one of those things. I wonder if it's you mentioned it, maybe it's ESPN and not the ACC, and I wonder if really you can distinguish the two a lot of times. But I wonder if it's really the ACC's effort to try to still capture kind of Northern Virginia, Washington, D.C., et cetera, by having Louisville, who's, I think, a decent property in football and a good property in basketball, still play Virginia instead of it being Maryland. Like you said, it's partly sliding them in just to be Maryland in terms of scheduling and that sort of thing, but to also still try to capture that area with a meaningful game for Virginia every year and still try to kind of hold on to that area. I wonder if that's true. Since you mentioned kind of not there not being a ton of sort of normal rivalries, knowing what you know about the schools that are in the ACC already, football and basketball both, like which school do you really think could organically kind of become a rival for Louisville? I have an idea, but I'm curious what you think.
Man, that's interesting. I would almost have, and this kind of sounds funny to even throw this out, but I would almost say like a Miami might become an organic rival just because of the last because of the bowl season last year. There seems to have been some you know matchups kind of in recent history where it's two. You look at Louisville and you look at Miami on the football side, and it's two teams in the conference that really fancy themselves as being up there with Clemson and Florida State, and one or the other probably can get there, but I doubt that both can. So maybe I see that as something as, you know, a rivalry emerging there, but Miami doesn't have the basketball chops to become a rival with Louisville. It's a tough call. Geographically, what, Virginia Tech?
Geographically, really, it's nobody.
Yeah.
My thought was it would have to be somebody in the Atlantic Division in football because you're so rarely going to play somebody in the other division besides Virginia. And I don't care what they do in terms of sort of social and scheduling engineering. I can't see, there's nothing about Virginia that's just like, it's sort of going to grow. I think Miami would be a good idea if they weren't in the coastal. So I think it's going to be NC State. That's my thought. Because they're the other Adidas school, right? And I think that the same color scheme, they've played before. They played twice. They played Louisville played there. They played them in the bowl game in the Belk Bowl a couple of years ago. I think that's who it's going to end up being because I don't think Louisville's going to really be competitive enough with Florida State and Clemson on a regular basis for it to be them in terms of football. So I think it's going to be NC State. That's my thought.
That's interesting, and I can see that from the Adidas perspective, and you know it's a good I don't know anything about Louisville fan base at all, but it's a really good tailgate culture at NC State, a motivated fan base, even though the results haven't been there, but I'm just not sure State's good enough to be a rival outside of someone that's just been a traditional rival like UNC is. State fans it's tough to say, Mark, because I don't think anything organically would happen with NC State where they just grow to dislike a team. I think their fan base is so focused on North Carolina that they're oblivious to anything else that's going on outside of that.
Well, the other option, if it's not State, is it's Syracuse. They would both be in the Atlantic in football. There's already kind of an existing relationship. Boeheim and Patino love / hate each other. They were Big East sort of brethren before, so it's going to be one of those two. But I was trying to think of somebody not that Louisville didn't already have a relationship with, either Syracuse or Pittsburgh. So
yeah, you know what? I'm not sure it's going to be a rivalry that crosses multiple sports. I think you're going to have a basketball rival, and I think you'll have a football rival. I don't see. I mean, you mentioned NC State. I don't see Dave Doran having the personality to clash with Bobby Petrino or you know, however long he's in Louisville. But really, you look at the basketball team, how long is Petrino going to be there? I mean, you look at Boeheim and Petrino, like you just mentioned, or Krzyzewski and Petrino, Roy Williams and Petrino. How long are any of those guys going to be there?
That's it's funny because I think we might really enjoy a little bit of a heyday for like the next 5 years. But if I told you in 5 years, Boeheim, Williams, Coach K, and Petino, none of them would be there. Would that really stun you?
No, I think that would. I think that's what people expect. You look at. We even had this conversation down here when the future ACC tournament schedule dates were announced or locations were announced, and I think it went through what like 2020 or something. I don't even know, but it, like it went through a certain date that just seemed like so far out in the future. And you start thinking about, you know, what coaches are going to be around for that ACC tournament. And I don't think anyone expects any of those four guys to be around.
I think this is just me. I don't have any inside info. I think Pitino will do this for three more years. I think he's going to do it this upcoming season and two more. And I think that's it. I think he took this year pretty hard. I think he really thought they had Kentucky's number in the tournament. And look, he's getting up there. Billy Minardi's daughter, that was a big reason that he sort of has hung around for as long as he has. She's done with high school now. I think Rick's probably got three good years in him, but I think he's going to try to max those 3 years out. And that might be true of Roy and Jim Boeheim and Coach K, too. I'm really not sure.
So the tattoo doesn't make him younger?
Despite everything that he hoped, no. The tattoo does not make him younger. But maybe it's better to get a tattoo when you're already old than when you're young and then have your tattoo get old, because that's when it goes really bad.
Because then ultimately, like, if you got a number tattoo, for instance, it would end up looking like Syracuse's new football uniforms with the elongated numbers the older
what
you get.
What the hell?
I don't even know, man.
The fours all look like those construction cranes you see. That was the worst of all. And really, they should have the uniforms that Illinois has. They look ridiculous, but nobody watches Syracuse anyways. Who cares?
Yeah. We'll get into a uniform conversation another night. But I do want to talk about another thing that's going on right now is the NBA playoffs. And we're not going to get into breaking down games or anything. We're going to keep it from a college perspective. NBC Sports put out a graphic this week that outlines 2014 NBA playoff rosters by college. And it gave them at least 10 minutes per game over 41 games played. So if, you know, someone, didn't play a lot, I guess, they would eliminate them from this graph. So this eliminated, like...
I haven't looked at the list, but it's a list of, like, who has the most players playing in more than 10 minutes. Okay, can I guess?
Yeah, sure.
All right, I would guess, honestly, that number one would be Duke or Florida.
Number one is Florida.
How about that?
With 9 players, and number two is Duke with 8 players.
How about that?
Yeah, so both teams have 5 starters on NBA rosters, and Duke has 3 bench players, and Florida has 4 bench players.
It's pretty remarkable. You know, I don't think Billy Donovan really gets credit. Like Cal, everybody thinks Cal is the guy that puts you in the NBA, but Billy Donovan's got a lot of pretty good NBA players that have come through there over the years, maybe as many as Cal over a longer period of time.
So, and that brings me to my next question that I really want to get to here, is you look at, let me go down the list here. So you've got Kentucky, Kansas, and UNC all tied at number 3, I guess, with 6 total players. UNC only has 1 starter and 5 bench players, so they're kind of at the bottom of that spectrum. And then Texas is next, and Marquette is tied there. Marquette has 5 players as well as Texas.
Who are the Marquette 5 players?
Dwayne Wade. D-Wade is the only one that I can think of off the top of my head.
Who are the... That seems like a misprint.
I wish you could click on it and drill down, but you can't. It has a list.
Shame on.
UCLA, Wake, and UConn are next at 4 players apiece. So let me ask you this: you look at Billy Donovan, you look at Coach K, you look at John Calipari, Bill Self, Roy Williams. How much credit do those guys deserve for developing talent, or is it really just about getting good players in your program that will do well in the NBA regardless?
Well, I mean, this is what we have this debate about Calipari all the time. There was that stupid quote from Mitch McConnell today where he's like, he said about Calipari, you're creating more millionaires than, I don't know, Microsoft or some crap like that. You know, if Anthony Davis had gone to Fairfield, he still would have been the number one pick in the draft. And the same is true of Randall and James. I think it really is far more reflective of who gets good players out of high school. And I think you really have to kind of drill down on individual bases to see who's really, quote-unquote, making or developing good players. I mean, Matt Bonner
has been playing for the Spurs forever. I don't think he was an extremely highly rated guy or anybody thought would be a great pro. Same with Chandler Parsons. You know, players like that for Florida, that sort of thing, I think you look at and say, that's a guy that, like, develops players. But for the most part, with Duke or Carolina or Kentucky, or unfortunately not Louisville, it really is just more reflective of who is able to successfully recruit guys that were probably going to be pretty good pros anyway.
So Louisville's got one bench player in the playoffs. Who is that?
I'm going to say it's San Francisco Garcia for the Rockets.
Okay. Yeah, see, I need to follow the NBA closer to learn who's on what roster. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of schools tied at one. That's where Louisville is. Other kind of semi-surprises at the multiplayer levels, Boston College.
What?
That's a lot. Oh, no, they got two in there. Yeah, come on, man. I don't even know who plays for Boston College now. And I.
Do you know who their coach is now?
Yeah, it's Jim Christian.
Do you think that's a real person or that's
no.
a mistake?
No, I told Matt last time that I was going to go to ACC Media Day and have a label on that just said Jim Christian and see how many people came up and introduced themselves to me.
You should do that, like, I'm Jim Christian, like a bunch of us go there and be like, each one of us say, I'm Jim Christian, and see who sort of calls us out and who doesn't.
and they won't know until they threaten to cut Olivier Hamlin in half. Yeah. And then the one who says no, I'm not the real Jim Crit, then you know it's him.
Oh, that's fantastic.
ACC parables, I love it.
No one cares about
LSU, Maryland, New Mexico, Pitt, Wisconsin.
Wait, LSU. So who would that be?
Shaquille, right? Is he still in the NBA?
Is Big Baby in the playoffs?
Yeah, he's in there.
For in who? There.
He plays for who's he play for? He plays for somebody.
I don't know.
He's definitely in there. I've seen like tweets about him, so I know he's in the playoffs.
That seems like a lie.
Xavier, I couldn't even tell you who those players are.
Nope.
Stanford.
The Lopez brothers, right?
Oh, okay. So one starts and one sits at the bench because they got one starter and one bench player. That's sure. Kind of rough on their family. Creighton has two.
Creighton? Who the hell from – like, McDermott's not already in the NBA, is he?
No, I think – well, I don't know. Did he play both this year? Did he play
– Did you see his tweet owning that poor guy that gave him hell on Twitter? That was really great.
No, but I'm sure I would have appreciated it. What did he say?
Oh, the guy was basically like, you play basketball like a pussy or whatever. And the guy and the guy had the same haircut as Macklemore. And he actually responded to the guy and was like, settle down, Macklemore. It was glorious. I love when people do that.
Do you picture that guy going to the barbershop and saying, "Hey, give me the Macklemore cut"?
I bet you he actually went to the barber and was like, "Give me the Miley Cyrus," and ended up with Macklemore.
Because it's a guy. So
yeah, exactly.
It's the same haircut. So yeah, I don't even know who half these players would be on these rosters, but. I'm with you. I think it's more of a recruiting edge than it is a developmental thing. You know, again, you look at Elton Brand would have been a guy that went to Duke that would have been on any NBA roster if he'd gone to, you know, NC Central. it's just not a developmental thing. But, you know, I do wonder when you start looking at individual players like Mason Plumlee would he have been better off going somewhere else? Because that's kind of the story that people tend to lean on down here.
I don't see why he would have been better going somewhere else. I mean, his ceiling is probably basically the same regardless where he went. I mean,
So there you go. I mean, I think that's the answer, is that it doesn't matter where these guys go. They're going to be who they are when they get to the NBA anyway.
The only time I think it really matters is guys who maybe wouldn't have gone – but really accepted kind of exceptional coaching and became something, I think, really. Like, Josh Harrelson has no business sort of hanging around NBA camps. But, you know, Cal did a really good job with him. And I don't think anybody thought Gorgui Dzhangelo starting and win, like, NBA Rookie of the Month out of high school. But, you know, Rick did a good job with him. And I think every coach has those guys. And I think you can pick out individual examples where a coach has taken a kid and sort of developed him into something you wouldn't have been otherwise. But, you know, Julius Randle or Wiggins or Kyrie Irving. I mean, if Kyrie Irving had gone to Western Kentucky or UNC Wilmington, he still would have been one of the top players taken in the draft and had a great year. And the coaches get too much credit.
And I think Kyrie's a good example of what the real story is here, really giving these players credit, is you go to Florida, you go to Duke, you go to Kentucky, you go to Kansas, you go to UNC, you're getting drafted by a bad team, right? Yep. I mean, you're going in the lottery, you're getting drafted by a bad team. These guys, this is not players in the NBA. So you mentioned Kyrie, he's not on this list because he's not in the playoffs. So you look at guys like Gerald Henderson and Josh McRoberts who went to Duke, who have helped, you know, lift the Bobcats from being an absolute joke of a team to being just enough above being a joke to get in the East Conference playoffs. You know, what, like one or two games above 500 or whatever they finished up at. But still, you've made your team better and you've gotten yourself into the playoffs. I think maybe that's where the credit comes in, is you get you're a good player, you get drafted by these bad teams, and you help elevate that team to become a good team and get them in the playoffs. So, I don't know. I tend to think that that's more of the story than these coaches putting guys on NBA rosters. But I know that's the recruiting angle of it, so that's what the story becomes from a college side.
Well, you know, if you're a highly rated guy, you know, if Calipari walks in there and says, look, Daniel Orton played 5.5 minutes a game for me, and he was taken in the first round anyway, I mean, there's a reason that's persuasive, and it's not unreasonable. And if nothing else, Calipari walks in the living room and can sell playing time and the history of guys getting drafted highly. And I think that's, by the way, that's also a big factor, is you take a superstar kid and just give him 30 minutes a game, he's going to produce a decent amount and look pretty good. And that's why a lot of these guys get drafted as highly as they did. So it's not completely unreasonable, but I think a lot of times, like you said, coach gets way more credit than he's really deserving. These are super incredibly talented kids and physically kind of gifted, and that's really why these schools or these NBA teams want to take a chance on.
Yeah, and it really, to me, drives home that coaching may not matter as much as we like to think it does at the college level. That it's, if you've got good players, you're going to win games, and it really doesn't, the coach will get in the way more than he'll help.
Well, ask yourself this. Did UConn win the national championship this year because Kevin Ollie is a great coach? No.
Yeah, no.
They had a great backcourt who really played way over their heads in the postseason. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Although, you know, Kentucky doesn't get to the finals without the tweak. So, you know,
Did you love that the tweak was pass more?
Well, what I think is interesting, and I definitely want to talk to Matt about this, is if the Harrison twins come back, everyone's on to them. They're just going to play them to pass. And you know, Cal messed up by giving away the big secret.
Yeah, that'll be fun. If they come back, I mean, it just means some other guy's on the bench. We'll see. That'll be interesting to see what happens.
Or transfer again, which is, you know.
To Georgia State. You see Jeremy Hollowell is going to go to Georgia State, so you could have Harrow, Kevin Ware, and Hollowell at Georgia State next year. It'll be our, sort of the Northern Triangle's favorite team in the South.
Who's Georgia the State. Coach of – I feel like Georgia State is a 30-for-30 waiting to happen.
In a bad way, though. It'll be like SMU, though. It'll be like, how are they getting these kids to come home and play there?
Well, they'll just take anybody. I mean, they're like...
No, that's Louisville. That's pretty much Louisville.
Louisville will take anybody.
Football-wise, yeah.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that at some point.
See, people say I can't make fun of myself and my own team, so...
It's not a joke. It's true.
Let the record show, I will make fun of my own team as well.
So we got a little bit of time left. We want to talk a few openings. Quickly, I'm going to make you go through the pain of talking about Donnie Tindall, who's going to be the new Tennessee head coach, who holds a special place in your heart.
Yeah, that bastard was the coach at Morehead State when Kenneth Faried and that team beat Louisville in the NCAA tournament. Look, I think it's a good hire for Tennessee. It's funny. It's almost like a carbon copy of Butch Jones for football, where they targeted one guy. I thought they really had him. fell apart at the last minute. They hire somebody else. And I think he might actually end up working better. To me, the funniest part, really, of this offseason is that I think probably, the third and fourth best jobs in the SEC. Kentucky, obviously, the best job in the SEC. Florida, probably second. And then you have Tennessee, Arkansas, Missouri are the third, fourth, fifth best jobs in the SEC. The two coaches left for Cal and Tulsa. And now they're scrambling to replace those coaches. I think Tennessee did a pretty decent job. I don't know what Missouri is going to do. And I think it's hilarious that the bulk of the forthcoming SEC network is going to be crap like this. And nobody wants to coach there.
Yeah, and if you look at the list that Missouri has, it's hilarious. I mean, it's honestly like a blue blood program is looking for a head coach, and that's who they're going after. I have no idea who they're going to end up with. I'm excited about Donnie Tendle to Tennessee because I get to make Big Lebowski jokes, and that's really neat.
Donnie Tendle, it's funny because like they pine after Bruce Pearl. He has a ton of personality. I think he'll actually play extremely well with Tennessee fans. He's sort of fat, and he has a southern accent, and he's very funny and very sarcastic. I think he'll play really well with Tennessee fans. I think they'll be happy that they ended up with him. Were you surprised, Ben, that Mike White, the son of your beloved athletic director, would sort of flirt with Tennessee and then basically opt to stay at Louisiana Tech for security reasons rather than take the Tennessee job?
No, because I think that, you know, you look at college basketball coaches, typically don't get if you're one of the small guys and you go to a bigger program and you don't do well, you typically don't get a second chance. And I don't think you want your first chance to be at Tennessee with just insane expectations that completely fall out of line with reality.
Well, let me ask you, Tennessee, where Quanzo Martin basically leaves Tennessee because the fans petitioned to have another coach be the coach there. And you had, I think it was Bruce Pearl today, who's now at Auburn, saying, I want, or the SEC basically twisted our arm to schedule more difficultly for next season in the non-conference schedule. If you had kind of a magic wand, what on earth do you do to make the SEC a better basketball league?
I don't know that you can. I mean, I really don't know that you can. I mean, I think football is just so entrenched there that it's really difficult to get guys who want to go play second fiddle at a university to go to an SEC school. I mean, I think the obvious answer is money. You know, if schools are making so much money off of the SEC network, they need to repurpose that in their coaches for basketball if they want a good basketball product. But I mean, honestly, let's think about it. In the SEC, you've got three or four programs that are serviceable. You know, obviously with the upper end being a lot more than serviceable. I'm just talking about the low end of it. And then the rest of it, the kind of the name of the game is just don't lose us a ton of money.
Yeah.
Is really the purpose of basketball. And it's, you know, the opposite of what the ACC did for so long. The ACC was all about, hey, football program, don't lose us money. And you saw how behind that got them in football. And it really took the schools ponying up a lot of money to get really good coaches to come and coach their football teams. But SEC isn't going to do that because basketball is not a power player. You know, football, the ACC had to do that for survival. The SEC, it's a luxury, right? Being good at basketball is a luxury. I don't know if you can. I don't know if there's enough of a desire to even do it.
Well, you know, it's funny because you mentioned, you know, using the money to get good coaches. I mean, Frank Martin is a pretty good coach, and South Carolina is still a barforama for basketball. And so I'm not really, you know, Mike Anderson is an all right coach, and Arkansas still is kind of the same crappy program they've been since they, you know, since Nolan Richardson left. Same with Missouri. I mean, it's funny you mentioned Missouri acting like a blue blood. I mean, I'm not sure people even realize they've still never been to the Final Four. Never. And people treat them like they're kind of a big deal in college basketball. I'm not really sure what you do other than just happen to luck into your Billy Donovan. Like, these other programs need to find that guy who just is sort of incredibly driven and can recruit guys to himself and elevate the program. I mean, we talk about Florida being a great program, but if, like, Billy Donovan was sort of raptured tomorrow, Florida plays in a dome that's a piece of crap, and nobody really cares about basketball that much.
Yeah,
but I love Florida.
Yeah, but it's Florida. I mean, I think if you put Billy Donovan in Alabama or Mississippi State, I mean, is he going to get the same kind of players that he gets at Florida?
Yeah, but the point there is, I mean, Florida didn't make the tournament one time until the 80s. I mean, before Billy, really before, you have Norm Sloan and Lon Kruger, before those guys in the late 80s, early 90s, Florida was Mississippi State. I mean, Florida's a great place to be, but it was a wasteland for college basketball.
So let me throw this out.
Still a wasteland.
Let me throw this out. You look at kind of a heyday for SEC. I mean, Kentucky's always been good. You had Nolan Richardson at Arkansas, who's getting a lot of players. You had the run at LSU. You've had teams pop up and be good. Have football recruits outpriced basketball for the bagman who's paying these players to go to the SEC schools?
I'm not sure they've outpriced them, but I think that they don't care. It's not the priority. Might be basically I just don't care about basketball.
Well, football was always there, right? It's not like at LSU and Arkansas they didn't care about football when their basketball teams were good. But I mean, you don't get a Chris Jackson, you don't get a Shaquille O'Neal without something strange going on, in my opinion. You know, I'm
sure.
Just throwing it out there. But you know, if you're a booster, are you going to spend money on Chris Jackson? Or are you going to spend money on, you know,
Cam Newton?
Right.
Yeah. Look, I think it's all about return on investment. And I think that, you know, if you're in the SEC, that Kentucky and Florida are going to get it done with the kids really at the top. And then one other program probably will be pretty good in a given year. So if I'm a booster at Auburn, why on earth would I offer any kind of assistance to get a kid to come play basketball at Auburn when I could get them an outside linebacker or the next Nick Marshall or Trey Mason or somebody? And in terms of the school or anybody that really matters, where would you direct your quote-unquote helpers, Stephen Godfrey, who did a great job chronicling what it's like to sort of be a bag man? I mean, where would you direct people? Would you direct them to football guys at a place like Ole Miss? Or basketball. I mean, screw basketball. It's not going to do anything for you because the guys at the top are already as good as they're going to be. And football, it's so much more lucrative for you to get sort of the elite kids to come there anyway. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right about it.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of, you know, the downfall of NC State football the last couple of years is that, you know, all of the booster money went to basketball recruits. And, yeah, I love how we're talking about this. Like, it's fact. Like, we know it, but it's not. I mean, it's not that far off of the path of reality to even consider that happened. But
yep,
I don't know. It's just a theory about, you know, maybe why it's really hard to be good in football and basketball at the same time.
I'm sure that's a contributing factor, if nothing else.
So yeah, just throwing it out there. The last thing I want to get into was a tweet that Jeff Goodman sent out this week about the Minnesota Timberwolves opening and kind of just casually dropped Tom Izzo's name in there. To me, there's no way. To me, Izzo's one of those guys that's going to die a college basketball coach.
He's going to die at Michigan State, not even just a college basketball coach.
But it was interesting where it came from, though, because Jeff Goodman's not usually the kind of guy that's going to throw a coach's name in there unless he's actually heard something. So is this one of those things where there's smoke, there's fire, or is Izzo angling for something? So he kind of, you know, or his agent threw his name in there to get mentioned, or is Goodman just insane?
Well, I don't know Jeff Goodman, so I don't know. All I know is he's a cow. That's the only thing I don't know. That's the only thing I know about Goodman. But you know, Izzo is older, and I think that. It's funny to hear Goodman casually toss his name out about an NBA opening at the same time, Pete Thamel had the article earlier basically saying, like, Izzo is at kind of a crossroads where he can't get the elite kids, and so maybe his window is closed on winning a national championship at Michigan State, another national championship at Michigan State, at kind of the same time. I mean, you know, I think for a really as crappy and ridiculous as Thamel's article was about Cal getting out-coached in the Final Four and why that proves he'll never be, he would never be a good NBA coach, I do think kind of one nugget out of that article that really made a lot of sense was, if you look at who wins in the NBA now, the coaches really aren't huge personalities. They are numbers guys, analytics guys, managers. They're Eric Spoelstra's. And I mean, hell, can you, I mean, how many NBA coaches that are in the playoffs right now can you really even name?
Yeah, it's difficult. I don't know.
And so I think that more than anything else is the code. I mean, the NBA is about players. Players, players, players. And really outside of Greg Popovich and Phil, I mean, what the hell does Scott Brooks add to Oklahoma City? Nothing. And I think that maybe more than anything else, Pete Thamel sort of, at least accidentally, because I think he's awful, landed on something that's really true, and that's that in the modern NBA, you better have the best players, and your coach just better not screw it up, and that's really it. And so the, you know, the Celtics, they want Brad Stevens because he's an analytics and a guy on the margins and that sort of thing. They don't want a giant personality, and that's probably why Calipari will never leave Kentucky, and probably why these big-name coaches, that's probably why Billy Donovan won't go to the NBA. Because in the NBA, success is about really having the better players and not screwing it up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what that has to do with Izzo. I mean, I completely agree with everything he said. I'm thinking about why this rumor is even being floated out there, and I can't think of a reason for it.
The only thing I can think of, The only thing I think of is I think there might be a segment of Michigan State fans who maybe are a little restless. I mean, this was the first senior class at Michigan State that didn't make a Final Four under Izzo.
Michigan's playing well. That's got to be a contributing factor, I would imagine.
Yeah, and they didn't sign, you know, an elite recruiting class. They lost a couple of, you know, a couple of really key players to the NBA draft after this year. It might be a slightly thin at Michigan State next year. The only thing I could really think is that maybe Izzo wanted that out there so people would sort of be happy that they have him, you know, be grateful that they've got him. Because I wonder if Michigan State fans have gotten a little bit spoiled. I mean, it's remarkable that they've been able to have the run that they've had without really getting top five recruits every year. I mean, think about that. I mean, he's been there a long time. This is the first senior class that did not make a Final Four in their time at Michigan State. That's an incredible run.
Yeah.
And I wonder if maybe the reason that that rumor got thrown out there is because people are growing a little bit restless with the fact that they have been kind of slightly less successful than usual the last 4 years.
I'm surprised that it didn't come from Mateen Cleaves. Or who would be like the Michigan State Rex Chapman? Who would that be?
It would have to be Mateen Cleaves, who is, if you made a Muppet Mateen Cleaves, he would actually just be Mateen Cleaves. His mouth extends all the way to both ears. It's remarkable. I've seen a human being whose mouth just opens at the ears. But that's what Mateen Cleaves is.
So Muppet Mateen Cleaves would have broken that story about done deal Izzo to the Lakers or to the Timberwolves.
Who would Duke's Mateen Cleaves be? Louisville's not even cool enough to have one. A Rex Chapman, I guess. Who is Duke's Rex Chapman?
I mean, I think it's
Danny Ferry.
I mean, you got to think about a player that's like beloved in Durham, but a little bit out there. I think you'd have to say Leitner.
A la Abdul Nabi.
He's not Rex Chapman. I mean, Rex Chapman was like king of Kentucky up until that tweet.
God, Louisville doesn't even have one.
I'd have to say it's Leitner for UNC. It would be like Vince Carter or Dante Calabria. That would be that would be their guy, because I mean that dude owned Chapel Hill when he was here.
Brian Hill. What is he doing?
I don't know. In States, obviously, is Julius Hodge.
forever and ever.
Forever would be Julius Hodge. So they had a, I don't know if you heard about this or not, but they had a 3-on-3 Legends game for charity down here. They had Duke, NC State, and UNC Legends playing 3-on-3 and Julius Hodge.
No Wake Legends?
No Wake, no. It was a triangle thing. Wake, come on. Right. But
dig up Bones McKinney, get out there,
play. State won. It was Corciani, Roddy Monroe, and Julius Hodge was their 3-on-3 team.
Wow.
And they beat Duke in the finals by 30 points in a 3-on-3 game.
Who were Duke's three?
Leitner played. who else played? I can't even remember who the other guys were. But they were like older guys. So State's team was younger, especially with Hodge, who could be playing in professional ball right now.
Right.
But it was funny because that actually made those three the most successful NC State team this entire athletic year. So good for them.
I think their baseball team lost 14-2 tonight. Actually, as we record this,
to Campbell. I don't know what the final score was, but I do know like halfway through the game they were down like 6-0 to Campbell.
Wow.
It's been a rough year in Raleigh. No conference football wins.
Well, if there's anybody to fix it, it's Debbie Yao, right?
Yes. Love Debbie Yao.
Oh, don't we all?
All right, so we got anything else before we need to go?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm just going to bask in this basketball schedule after last year. It's like a mouthwash. It's wonderful.
And people down here will just wring their hands until the season starts. But we're going to have another big week on the walk-ons. Mark, you may be back later on the week. Who knows? We're trying to do a lot of stuff. Matt will be here. Chip Patterson. Hayes Permar will be here. We've got a big week again. So,
Ben, I'll say this, but as you wrap things up, the best thing that's happened today is the gif of Drake sitting courtside in Toronto, lint-rolling his pants for the world to see.
It's unbelievable.
He's unbelievable. Amazing. He's the gift that keeps on giving.
He really is. And I like this. I don't know if you followed it or not, but there's like a kind of a fake beef between Drake and Jay-Z because of this series that I'm not sure Jay-Z has even acknowledged that this is.